This week on Fanboy Versus, we're back after a two-week break. We talk about some of the missed news items and discuss our top five must-read books of the week, including X-Men with Women. Also, we'll catch you up on what we missed and the best book of the week right here on Fanboy Versus, featuring Chris McFeely, Chris Triplett, Adam, and I'm your host, J.D. Church. Welcome to Fanboy Versus, and we are so glad that you are joining us. It has been a slight break since we have been here. We took 2 weeks. Did we take 2 weeks off, I think?
I feel like it was two.
I think it was two.
It seems like it's been a lifetime, though.
It felt like it was two. We've had a couple of things going on, so we'll do some housekeeping. We'll do some housekeeping here right quick. First and foremost thing I want to talk about, as most of you know, our good friend and co-host Nicole Hale was involved in a car accident last week, I believe. I think it was early last week. She is, in fact, I think it was the day of the show? Was it Saturday?
Saturday or Sunday. It was just over a week ago. Yeah.
She was involved in a pretty bad car accident. Someone ran a red light on her. She is doing okay. She is in the hospital. She is hoping to get out tomorrow. So if you're listening to this show recorded, that's going to be Monday, but whatever. So we, of course, have kept her in our thoughts. I've been talking to her a little bit here and there. She is basically, you know, in that road recovery. So I know that there's a couple of groups. I know that there's a couple of people that have tried to set up some help and stuff for her. So if you want to look into those, you know, we highly recommend that. Obviously Nicole's spot will be ready for her when she comes back. But, in the meantime, we are going to have some fill-in hosts sort of help us out along the way. And the first one of those is going to be Adam. So welcome, Adam. If you're watching the video, he is the, dynamic trio.
The question is, you've got to guess which one of those three is me. One of them is.
That's an actual photo.
Oh.
Oh, yes. One of those three people is me.
I just thought it was an Alex Ross painting.
Yeah. he has to get his models from somewhere.
It's very over to Kingdom Come number 4.
Well, I've got a 1 in 3 shot, so I'm going to go with Batman.
I'm going to go with Batman.
Triplet?
Oh, the chicken? I don't know.
Oh, unfortunately, Church McFeely got it right. I am indeed Batman.
Oh, very good. Nice.
It is the only time you'll ever see me beardless.
That's, I was going to say you're beardless in that, and you have amazing abs.
Oh, yes. Not stuffed with toilet tissue at all.
So, that's well done. So, that's not the most terrifying thing that we've had up there, but it's close. We'll say it's close. I'm going to have nightmares now about Batman and chickens. So, Adam, again, thank you for joining us this week.
Very much for inviting me on.
And hopefully, you know, we may have you again. Like I said, we'll have a rotation of probably some people that have been on this show. May try to use this as an opportunity to get some people that haven't been on the show but have wanted to be on, or that I've wanted to have on, come on. So hopefully that'll work out. But like I said, we're very anxious for Nicole to return as soon as she is well. And well enough to be on, which is, again, hopefully soon. So,
thoughts go out to Nicole.
Yep, absolutely. So, second bit of housekeeping is that we are starting a brand new format for the show today. And it's going to be an absolute train wreck. So,
but you know what? What's great about train wrecks? People stop to look at them.
They do. They do. So, if nothing else, this should be entertaining because it's going to be a little bit different. We'll just go with it as it goes. Take it as it comes, as it will. But it should be a lot of fun. Hopefully, it'll be fun for you. And we would love your feedback on it. Please let us know what you think of the new format as we go through this. And we super apologize to Adam because he's basically jumping in completely blind. At least the three of us have sort of talked about this for a couple weeks. As Chris McFeely is like, yeah, right.
I saw an email.
Yeah. There were a couple of emails. At least they knew that something might happen.
So the other piece of housekeeping, I guess I should say, is that I'm alive. I've had like two tornadoes in the last 3 weeks try to kill me. And
how close did this last one come? Because this
last one was within miles.
God.
I'll put it this way: the last one was the more entertaining one. This particular tornado, yeah, entertaining. Maybe that's a bad choice. This last tornado started. All these always start like west of here, and it was sort of like heading at us, and then it veered south. So it was going to go south of us. We're like, okay, we're cool. And then it took an abrupt northward turn. And so then it was coming right at us again. And they were saying that this was huge. And oddly enough, they were directing people. They're like, this is going to be big. If it hits your house, you're going to die if you're in your house and you're not below ground. And we have nowhere, good to go in our house. Our house is sort of built like a circle in the sense that all of the rooms are around the outside. So there's no, like, interior room, which is what they recommend. So we like grabbed our cats, put them in one carrier, got in the car, and thankfully we did the right thing in terms of we drove like east a ways and then north a ways and then east a ways again. And thankfully the storm, as we were driving, took another southward turn and missed our house and missed all of our stuff. So we were good. Didn't have any damage, didn't lose anything here. There were, a couple of people within the city killed. There was a lot of traffic. There was a lot of flooding. So it has been pretty crazy here in Oklahoma City. I don't know what we did to piss God off, but if there is one...
It's probably because you don't believe in him.
It's probably because I don't believe in God.
Yeah, that's probably what
and it is. He's ticked about that. You're like... or something else. I don't know what, but anyway, it's been kind of crazy. So we're ready for like the weather here to calm down, but I'm okay. Some of you may have been seeing tweets. I think probably not the ones on the other side of the ocean. Maybe saw them later, but the local people saw me tweeting as we were like driving away and in pandemonium. So we're going to try to not do that anymore. Anyway, okay, so I think that's the last bit of housekeeping that I had to give out. So let's go then to the news, and Chris McFeely is going to tell us what happened, what have we missed, what's going on.
I wish I could keep track of everything, so I'm really just cherry-picking the stuff that I can remember because it's far too hard to search back through 3 weeks of stuff on all the major news sites. So, most recently, I guess, DC's latest... Well, one of many horror stories, although this one's quite amicably presented, is that James Robinson is leaving Earth 2 and the company.
What?
Yes, he has confirmed that he's leaving the company. He will not be writing anything for DC with his departure from Earth 2. But it's all been presented in a very upbeat and just amicable way. He's not saying, it's not being... framed as if he was storming off the book or anything.
That's what I didn't understand. Yeah. Like he was not happy, and that's why he's leaving completely, or what? Because everything about it was kind of weird.
Yeah, there's very few other ways to. If it came out on its own, in isolation, it would be like, oh well, whatever. He must have got a better offer somewhere else. But in context of everything else that's going on, you do have to think that maybe it's just more of the same, and that he's just been a little less. Table flippy ovary about it on his way out,
he had plans.
He's no Rob Liefeld.
He's a little bit. I mean, he's a little bit older and wiser, though, right? I mean, yeah. I mean,
but he did. We know he did have plans for Earth 2. Through the end of the year at the very least, and into next year, which are obviously not happening now. So something happened.
So do we know who's taking over that book then?
I don't care enough to keep track. I don't know yet.
That's what I was going to say.
It's one of my favorite books, man. Help me.
That's the thing. I do hear consistently good things about Earth 2.
Yeah, it's been great.
He's gone, so does it matter? Is that book going to make it now?
That's a good question.
At least got lobbed down.
Oh, God. Yeah, I would hate to have to drop the book if
Like, really, at this point, the only person they could put on that book that might pique my interest and get me to stay with it is probably Geoff Johns.
Oh, boy.
But it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Give it to Charlie Mavil. God damn it.
That's probably the thing I should have led with, because this would have been news last week, the week before.
Some of the cancellations.
DC have had their newest round of cancellations, which include Legion of Superheroes, which is a little surprising. I mean, it wasn't selling great or anything, but that's one of their more mainstay books that they've always tried to keep out there, so it's a little surprising that that one has been cut off. Demon Knights, which is perhaps not massively surprising, and our beloved Dial H.
Yeah.
Aww, really?
Which is perhaps not massively surprising, but
that's kind of
massively
sucks.
Annoying.
Yeah.
What's interesting about that?
I thought it was doing well. Was it not selling well?
It was never selling great. I mean, you would think it would obviously have bookstore clout, but...
I would think it would be like the book is like, okay, everything else in DC sucks. Buy this book, and it would have this massive influx of like the best-selling DC comic just because there's nothing else.
And I think that the thing about that bothers me and scares me is that instead of trying to promote books that are good but not selling well, they're canceling a book no matter how good it is, and you know, trying to then continue to sell and create more stuff from the stuff that's selling, which is like that Deadpool idea, you know? It was like, you know, back when Marvel was like, oh, Deadpool's great, we need to make 500 Deadpool books, you know?
I mean, whenever something sells as low as these things do, though, there's really not any recovering them, to be honest. You got to come out of the gate strong, or you get nowhere, really, these in the modern industry, you know? So.
But they've got 52 books. I mean, surely
I certainly don't disagree
room,
with the second part of that argument.
You know, it's like, surely there's room for a book like this, you know?
They need to let go. At this point, I think the most obvious thing is that they need to let go of the 52 thing.
That's a lot of books to try to keep on the shelves. And
market is clearly not supporting them.
No.
And yet, there'll be 3 more farted out in next month's solicits, I'm sure, to replace them.
And we know what one of those might be.
do we? I've already...
Well, there's a new Superman book coming, so that counts, don't it?
Yeah,
well, that's from... that was before.
Superman Unchained or...
Booster Gold.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah,
they're doing a Booster Gold again?
Yeah.
They didn't officially confirm. I don't think that's actually been confirmed. That was more of a back conversation that implied. But
yeah.
It's a far more logical choice for a book than anything, than certainly some of the most recent ideas they've had.
Yeah.
Wow. Yep. You know things are desperate when they're putting out a new book.
Oh, shut up. Shut your mouth.
Sorry.
If they put a good writer on it, I'll check it out.
Heck yeah.
Is it Dan Jurgens?
Yeah, I hope so.
I would like for it to be somebody other than
I Jeff. Did. I actually tweeted Dan Jurgens and was like, please, and you know, and he didn't reply. So I know that he is working on something, though. He mentioned that he was going to be working on something after he finishes up the Superman book that he's doing.
They canceled Firestorm, right? That was
and,
one of the
yeah, the last yeah. issue of Firestorm sure. came out. I have it right in front of me, and they seem to be implying he might be joining the Justice League, but...
Well, he has already.
So is that... That was the thing. There you go. So that's how much I read the Justice League. So there you go.
Yeah, I'm just reading Justice League for the Shazam backup at this point, and it ends next issue, so that'll be me in Justice League.
Aww. There you go.
I do find it really strange that with the cancellation of Dial H, it puts me down to two monthly DC books. I have never been in the position where I've been down to two.
Yeah.
That's a little bit... put me down
to... It's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm still holding out with Aquaman. Justice League is gone after Shazam is gone, so...
I kind of feel like I'm going to keep getting Justice League because I want to read these characters, but their individual books are terrible. So I feel like maybe if I read the Justice League and Geoff Johns is writing it, maybe I'll be okay. At least I'll have adventures with Flash, even though his book is terrible.
Oh, I'm going to try Superman Unchained, and I'm on for the movement of the Green Team for a couple of issues, too, so I guess I'm not quite done with the company yet.
But man, what have they got to do to turn this around? Because like Marvel's like awesome right now, and DC's
I'm not normally the guy who points the fingers and say X and Y must leave, but I think at this point, like in all seriousness, getting rid of Didio has got to be the next move.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And that'll be that'll just break my heart. It'll just
And we can appoint Bob Harris, and
and then I really will cry.
What we do we then have a relaunch of the Just Imagine Stan Lee creating.
Oh my god!
Just imagine Stan Lee creating Super Bat.
Just imagine Stan Lee creating Blackhawks.
Just imagine Stan Lee creating the haunted tank.
Well, you know, once they get Harris started, like, in charge, could I get a Crypto the Dog book? Because that would be awesome.
There you go. Just imagine Stan Lee creating Crypto the Super Dog.
Right? Oh, man.
That has got to be ranking pretty highly on the short list of this
stage. Yeah.
It's a Superman property, you know?
Yeah. Since cash in, actually, I'm surprised Ace doesn't have his own book at this point. That's
Ace doesn't exist at this point, does he?
Well, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, but Crypto does, so they can make.
Yeah, Crypto does, but I mean, really, actually, you know what? You know what? They need an Ace and Crypto book.
Oh,
there you go.
It's gonna happen now.
They call it. Oh. Here's what they call it. The Super Friend Pups.
What's a dog related world's finest joke? I can't think. Help me. World's
The man's super best friend.
There it is. I think that'll do. And it
world's
can be
furriest.
The world's furriest.
Keep the super cat in there. Yeah. Helmet the super horse and Beppo the super monkey. And you can get Art Balthazar and Franco to do it. Oh, wait. They already do those in children's storybooks. Just publish those.
Oh, yes. I don't know.
Then a whale with the Aquaman symbol on its head.
What's Aquaman have? He has a seahorse, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think he's got that. He's got an enormous seahorse that he talks to.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, so, right. what else is in the news?
This is all free, DC. This is just, right here.
It would help. I guess more recent news, as in, like, just the other day, we had some more news about Guardians of the Galaxy, which is still happening, folks. It is.
Yeah,
it's a movie.
And they're saying that Karen Gillan of Doctor Who fame is going to be playing a female villain in it.
That came out of, like, nowhere, didn't it? I mean,
it really did. This is such an eclectic cast this film has.
Yeah.
It's going to be a strange movie. I hope I like it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, because what we're hearing, I was like, I don't know.
I mean, but it does, Dave.
You just have to guess who she would be possibly be playing. I mean, Nebula seems to be what
I was thinking. Nebula, saying, yeah.
But I mean, who else is it going to damn well be in a cosmic Marvel movie?
A lady villain in a cosmic. Who else? I mean, is
the,
could she be Death?
Death? Short of Death herself, was
yeah,
the
yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
I
could like her as Death. That'd be all right. That'd be kind of strange. Kind of a different take.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Scottish.
Maybe you would fall in Death. Maybe you would fall in love with Death too. Then you too could be Thanos.
Then, like, all of us geeks would, like, feel the plight that is Thanos. Dude.
Right. We would understand.
Yeah, that could really tell.
Right. We would be like, God.
We understand.
Oh, we get Thanos now. We understand.
He's actually the hero of the piece.
Right. You tell those Guardians.
Would Death still be ginger, or would they have to change her hair color?
No, they got to leave the hair color, dude. No.
Can you really have a ginger Death?
Yes. You've got to, yes. Red, yeah. Red Death.
A sentence I never thought I'd ever hear. Can you have a ginger Death?
Is it like Discworld, where she just plays the Death of Gingers, or?
I thought you were going to say, is she going to play Binky? I thought that was going to be quite harsh.
Gracious, no.
Oh.
Good lord, Chris. Good lord.
Wow.
What the heck else is in the news? Kind of coming up short here. Marvel hasn't, besides announcing that, Marvel really hasn't announced anything new. Infinity is happening. And that's really all that's on the horizon for Marvel right now, comics-wise. There's nothing new major coming out from Marvel with Infinity happening, which is a 6-issue miniseries with tie-ins in the appropriate Avengers book and also Thunderbolts for some reason.
Movie news. I remember some movie news. Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. They're going to be in
the Oh, yeah.
I don't think that...
And he's going to also be in the next X-Men movie. Whoa, crossover.
Yeah, what happened there? No, probably a different actor. A dick swinging from Bryan Singer.
Yeah.
I had a theory the other day. It wouldn't actually be a crossover, but it would be just so excellent if Joss Whedon cast the same actor just to confuse the hell out of everybody. That would be awesome.
You know? I think it would be. It'll probably more likely to confuse the common man if it's not the same actor.
Yeah.
You know, like all those people who are like, "Oh, where's Batman in the Avengers?" You know, questions.
God.
They exist. They were real people.
That makes me cry.
But I don't think
to confirm Scarlet Witch in the movie continues to fuel my thoughts that Coulson is the Vision. Because how do you have Scarlet Witch without the Vision?
Coulson is alive.
Coulson's alive.
He's not alive.
Yes, he is.
In the TV show.
He's in the TV show. What do you mean it's a lie?
To be the Vision, I don't want him to be the Vision.
How could
the Vision's going to be in the movie?
Well, that's a different case.
But that's at least Avengers 3, because you best not be giving me no Vision before Ultron.
Yeah, you got to have Ultron before the Vision.
I mean, we have Ultron also.
I pretty much.
Who says Thanos has to be the villain for Avengers 2?
Well, I don't. This is the thing. I don't really expect Thanos to be the villain for Avengers 2. We've talked about this before. I've put this forward before, but internal to the film itself, before that post-credit scene rolls in Avengers, the whole film is setting up the World Security Council to be the baddies of the next story. You know? And I feel like the Marvel Cinematic Universe is in such a place that that they could assemble their own Avengers. You know, you take the Abomination, you take War Machine, you take Bucky, who you can slap in the Alex Ross costume after the events of Captain America through the Alex Ross Captain America costume, and then you basically just fill it out with, say, two more members, and that's either going to be Giant Man and the Wasp or Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch, and there's basically your government Avengers who are going to go up against the real ones and then lay down their arms and work together whenever the real threat appears, whatever it is.
So they follow the typical team-up where they, like, fight each other at first, and then they, like,
fight each other because they hate each other and are supposed to.
They fight each other, then they solve the problems, and then, like, the shitty team becomes Avengers West Coast. That's how it goes.
No. The government-sponsored Avengers then team up with the Bryan Singer X-Men team and go off to Genosha.
God.
This is so perfect, too. Listen to this. Okay, so, like, the shitty team becomes Avengers West Coast, and then they've got a way out to explain why Robert Downey Jr. is no longer Tony Stark, because he goes with them. There you go. Boom.
Not terrible, actually.
Yeah. You get rid of Iron Man because, you know, he's gone. He went to the West.
Seriously. I knew there was somebody I was missing. Falcon. Falcon would be on that.
Oh, yeah. Falcon's going to be there.
You know, he's in Captain America, too, as well. Right. So, I mean, the universe is really in. So we know they wanted the Abomination for the team already. War Machine is already a soldier. Falcon's a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. We have to see what they do with Winter Soldier, but I feel like he could be positioned in such a way as to become Bucky Cap before the end of it all.
Mm-hmm.
And then throw two more members in there to pad it out. And I mean, if you were planning for the future and doing Ultron,
he could be U.S. agent. They could do Bucky Cap.
Yeah. Or they could make him U.S. agent, smash the two characters together. I'd be cool with that.
Wow.
We wrote Avengers 2. Oh my god!
We really need to charge for this stuff.
That's been in my brain since last year. You know,
I just executive produced Avengers 2.
Have I not said that on this show before?
I don't think so. Have you?
I say it all the time when I'm talking to people in work, so maybe I haven't. But
yeah.
Yeah, that's my vision for Avengers 2 anyway, but then who knows? Yeah, maybe Thanos will show up and maybe we can have another alien invasion in a city somewhere.
Oh, yay, that'll be great.
I just feel like Thanos, like, I enjoy Thanos, but Thanos isn't an Avengers villain.
No.
Cosmic Universe, he's a Marvel Universe baddie. He's not somebody for an Avengers film. If you can't bring the
entire... But if you're doing an Avengers movie with Thanos, you're doing what? Infinity Gauntlet. That's the only story that matters, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Which, sort of makes sense that they could do because, you know...
But if you can't bring the entire forces of the Marvel Universe to bear against Thanos, what's the point of doing Thanos?
Yeah, that's really like an all-universe deal. Like, that's a down-the-road kind of... Get your universe padded out. We're gonna need Daredevil in there.
There. We're gonna have to see what. Oh yeah, because Daredevil will really be the first.
I just tried to slide that in. I wanted to see. I was just trying to slide that in under the radar. You know?
It would be great if Daredevil was the deciding factor. That would be the greatest thing ever.
The Thanos' ship goes dark, and then you know Daredevil's the only one that can navigate through it. You know,
he steals the gauntlet.
No, Thanos is like, he won't kill the Avengers. They will still be alive to witness his triumph, but he blinds them
he
all.
He blinds them all.
And Daredevil will be all like, oh, face, bitch, come here.
Yeah, saves the day.
Fuck you, motherfucker.
Good job, Ryan Reynolds. Oh, Ryan Reynolds as Daredevil.
Hey, get it.
Anyway, is there more news, or we could make up some more movies? I guess
there might be. I can't think of anything else.
No, did we talk about the CBR thing, the DC thing? Do we want to mention that as well? Or
I wasn't aware of it till you told me about it. So you go.
Well, the long and short of it is I guess CBR posted the other day. They basically consolidated all of what they referred to. Not they referred to, but I would refer to as the DC bitch threads. So, like, all the threads that people had posted about DC sucks for this reason, and they've screwed this up, and this is wrong. They sort of consolidated that into one enormous bitch about DC thread, and now you can't start any other threads where you complain about things happening in DC other than in that thread. Now, I don't know, but that kind of seems a little... it's one of those things where it's like I get both sides of it. Like on one side, you don't want your entire forum to be people complaining about various things about DC. But on the other hand, if you're kind of having an open forum about communication, and that just happens to be the things people are complaining about, I mean, at some point, isn't it just kind of it is what it is? I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's bad marketing, isn't it, to sit there in your forums and have everybody, every thread ever, all complaining about something that you're putting out. So you can kind of see what they're doing when the... You know, honestly, the most intelligent thing to do was be better?
Yeah, I mean, you know...
Maybe?
Yeah, and that's maybe the thing...
Maybe have good writers?
The thing that bothers me about DC's approach to this is to sort of... They're doing more work to sort of squash the bad PR than... Yeah. You know, to do that thing called putting out good stuff and not abusing your creators and, you know, things like that. So those of us here at Fanboy Versus, though, we will remain true. And since we really have no shot at ever having good PR with DC, then we will continue to be truthful on this show.
Well, we love your characters, we just don't love them right now.
Yeah, we're just like a little confused.
Well, that's an interesting thing that you say there. I had this conversation with a friend of mine earlier on this week, where his entire reaction to DC is, DC have all of these characters that are mass media umbrellas. They can be anything and everything that you want them to be. Mm-hmm. So why does nobody give two shits about them?
I was going to say, yeah, I think they have two characters who are mass media umbrellas.
Well, his point that he was making was that you've got Batman, Superman, and then he went, I like the Joker.
Yeah.
people know who Wonder Woman is. People know who some of these other characters are. It's just that they might not care for them worth a damn.
Yeah, I think... you know, it's just like anything. I mean, there's a lot of names that may be recognizable. That doesn't mean that they're entirely household names, though.
I'd actually go as far to say that I would say Aquaman is probably a household name, not for the right reasons.
No, no, he's sort of like that stepchild. Like, oh yeah, Aquaman talks to fish.
Exactly.
You know,
so people do know the name. So it. That's not one. I just don't understand DC's entire point of view of what they do with their characters. Especially now with the What are we into? Year two and a bit of the new 52, so to speak.
Almost. Hey, yeah, almost.
You know,
yeah.
We talk about how Aquaman's like not popular for the right reasons. Am I crazy to think that if they could do it, maybe that's the movie they should do and actually make Aquaman known for the right reasons? Because it would be like the one thing that everybody like knows who he is and surprise the hell out of everybody and make him this badass warrior or something.
Yeah,
no, I mean, that's what Johns was shooting for.
Is that even possible? I mean, could they do that?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think. I mean, they could make that film, but I don't think it'll ever happen until he gets some degree of penetration in something else, you know? He will be the Hawkeye, you know, or whatever, the figure who needs to be introduced somewhere else before they could manage to make a film of the same way we'll never get a Martian Manhunter film, you know.
Yeah.
Before, How good would it be if in the new Superman movie? I cut out a little bit over here.
No, I thought you were just asking the question, how good would a Martian Manhunter movie be?
But
how good would it be if Aquaman just appears in the new Superman movie? Well, not for long, if he's just in there.
Yeah, just throw him in there.
He just fights a guy out in the water. They don't even explain
Okay, now here's another one I've been saying all the time at work. So have I said this on the show before, what I want after the credits of Man of Steel?
Nope. No.
Okay, right. Okay, two possibilities. Okay.
Okay.
Post-credits, credits roll, battle done, everything sorted. Superman, night has fallen upon the city. Superman floats down out of the sky, stops on a roof, you know, just stands there, you know, just breathes heavily for a moment, and he's about to step away again. And then from the shadow of the rooftop doorway, just behind him, slides a shadow. Now, you don't zoom in on it, don't see any details of the shadow, but it's got the ears. You know what it is.
Yeah.
The voice says, "We need to talk." Something like that. Option two. Clark Kent returns to his apartment, beaten, battered, and victorious after the events of the film. Superman returns to his apartment. Whatever, with Clark Kent. The enemy throws himself down on his bed, falls asleep. You know, camera pans out. Towards the window, camera spins round, POV back out through the window, zooms across the skyline of Metropolis, closes in on one building rooftop ledge several blocks away. The lightning flashes. There's the shadow with a pair of binoculars. To the eye.
Yeah, I know where you did that from the animated.
That's pretty much straight from the animated one.
Yeah.
And
really, I mean, I would prefer the other one, but with the second one, you don't have to pay some jobber to play the character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to get somebody to do a voice. And the simple fact, the why that would work, and it's a funny thing, because if you look at the teasers on all the Avengers films, they all work on two levels, basically. Mm-hmm. The first, Iron Man has got, you know, it's got Nick Fury in it. But the common man goes, "Oh, Samuel L. Jackson," what's all that? The comic book fan goes, "Hey, said Avengers, this is the Avengers, this is the Avengers." The common man is going, "What's the Avengers? I don't know. It's not Samuel L. Jackson." Yep. And then Iron Man 2 is like, it's like, this is where Coulson went, you know. And a fucking hammer there. I don't know. I see what that is. And so on. And the comic book fan is going, "It's Thor's hammer. Oh my God." And then you get to the end, Thor, and Thor's is actually purely plot based. It's like, hey, look, Loki survived. It tells the audience. And I'm like, "Oh, Cosmic Cube. What the fuck is it? Oh, the Cosmic Cube." And you get, and Avengers is the first one with a post-credits tease that actually has no appeal to the common audience at all.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, anybody came out of that film going, "Who's that at the end? Is that about? I don't know." And the comic fan was still sitting in the friggin' theater trying to regain the use of their leg.
Yes. I've peed my pants.
Yeah, you gotta imagine what would happen if they did do the Batman thing, because like you're saying,
everybody knows the Batman.
Everybody would go crazy.
The world would collectively lose its shit.
Lose their shit.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it'd be amazing. Ready?
Oh man.
So obviously, I don't expect them to do it because it would be too good of DC.
We already know how Man of Steel is gonna end. Lex Luthor, Window. I'm going to take his dick down. That's basically how that movie's going to end.
Yeah, or get president.
That could be a pre-credit. That could be before the credits roll. I don't know. I suppose it depends whether or not Luthor has any kind of presence in the film at all.
Yeah, or if they go the way of like Hobgoblin or Green Goblin and, you know, do the whole Osborn kind of you know,
we may
in
not
the
see his face. We may just see like his the back of his head because they don't want to care. But yeah. Like you'll get like this idea that yeah, he hates him. Like he'll like throw a newspaper down or you know throw his iPad on the ground or something. I don't ever remember.
Yeah, you can smash that console for the robot dinosaur or whatever it was that always happened.
Oh God.
Basically what we're saying, DC, is would you look at what you did in your cartoons and just try and do that for Christ's
sake. Do some cool stuff, would you?
If we could actually get Justice League cartoon in a movie, my God, I would lose it. Yeah. I would lose it totally. So
but
much.
But more Justice League Unlimited. I mean, that's the funny thing about the Justice League cartoon is having, like, rewatched it, oh God, ML Pony in the chat's just posted Man of Steel would end with a close-up of a single tear rolling down Superman's face. That is the most plausible scenario of anything.
Yeah.
Having rewatched all of the Justice League cartoon just at the end of last year, it's like that three-part pilot is... It works in a cartoon, but a lot of that will not translate to a film. It's like Superman and Batman already existed. So did a Green Lantern. So did Flash. Martian Manhunter is brought in as part of the plot. And then just plopped into the middle of it is also, by the way, there's a magic island that the Greek gods invented where all only women. Just go with it. Right? It's Wonder Woman. You all know Wonder Woman. Just go with us, okay? We have to get her in here somewhere. That's basically how she's introduced. And we're not even going to come back to the island for like half the season, you guys. Seriously, just go with it. Because you couldn't get away with that in live action. Like, I do not know how they think they could possibly do a Justice League movie without at least introducing Wonder Woman. You know, I could understand
doing the
Flash.
Marvel approach. I don't know how they could do it without doing the Marvel approach.
I could understand Flash. I could understand Martian Man. Again, like, if you're doing an alien invasion plot, you can bring Martian Manhunter in as part of that and just go from there. I can even understand Aquaman, but I honestly don't think you can do it without doing Wonder Woman first.
Yeah. But they'll try. Like, but they'll
when
try.
We're talking about hypothetical scenarios and infeasible films, we all remember how Guillermo del Toro was talking about this doing this kind of Justice League dark film, and he wants to do Swamp Thing and Dead Man and Constantine and Zatanna all in one film, and how we all balked at it. But I was having this conversation with somebody recently, and they made the very good point of just do it like Hellboy, and suddenly I thought, holy shit, yes.
Yeah, that would work.
That could work. Yeah. Treat them as a pre-existing supernatural detective agency done with its tongue in its cheek so they're like, yes, this is Alec. He is a swamp man.
That would be badass, actually.
Yeah, that would totally work.
One of our members is a ghost who possesses people to communicate. It's like probably it would be a tiny Asian woman. And the POV character would be like, and you are? And it was like, hey, what are you looking at? And it would be dead. This is Austin. You know?
Great.
Oh, make that.
I want to see this. Mate.
I want this now. Oh, jeez. Wow.
It's like, we got a problem with the plant. Call in Swamp Thing today. We need him to talk to it.
Yeah,
something like that. You know.
The plant's sad. He ain't gonna talk to me.
He'll have to have like a human form though, and then like where it's like all the branches like close down, and then it like goes back out. It would be awesome.
No, I think that they would just keep him like that all the time, just like Abe Sapien, just floating around in the.
I figured Swamp Thing would kind of.
But he would be doing really mundane things, you know, like just doing the vacuuming or something in the background.
The image in my head there is just, this is Alec, he's a swamp thing. He just looks up from doing the dishes. Oh, yeah.
He would have like one of those Japanese trees he'd be trimming, and that would be a scene.
Oh, man.
Consider that barbaric. I mean, you probably have some sort of scene there where somebody is tucking into it. Salad, and he's just chastising them for it, something like that.
He throws a guy through a window because he's like eating a salad.
Oh my God!
Something like that. You play up that as a humorous angle, you know.
All right. Well, we have sold.
I don't know who your POV character is. It's probably Constantine because he's so street. I was going to say street magician-y, but that's a whole other guy.
What about Zatanna though? I think Zatanna would probably be a good, interesting POV out of that.
She's quite.
You have to kind of,
you know.
She's got to be the mysterious character, I think, because she's a magician.
I mean, sadly, Sadly, yeah, she's the love interest. And you know, to be, I'm pretty sure they've boned in the comics, so it all works out.
Yeah,
but she's your obvious. It's the way Hellboy repurposed Liz as a love interest, even though she was never that in the comics. She would be the love interest for Constantine. That's probably what it is, actually. Whoever's in charge of this, you need a fifth. There needs to be a fifth. I can't think who it would be. You got Deadman, you got Swamp Thing, you got Satana. And it's like, whoever it is, whoever is the fifth, brings Constantine in. Constantine is, I ain't interested, Mike. Satana walks past, and he's like, how much you say it paid? And he's in because he saw Anna's legs.
We'll end on this note just because I want to. We've sold way too many ideas too.
Yeah.
But one thing I loved about Avengers, no love interest. That was great.
Yeah, very true. Yeah. I like it.
I absolutely love that about Avengers. They, you know, Joss Whedon, praise the Whedon. There was no love interest in that movie.
And he's good at that, doing a story about characters and not making the main female character be the love interest. Yes. He's good at that. I mean, that's his
thing. Yeah, and it totally could have happened between, you know, Black Widow and Hawkeye, and they kept it platonic, and I thought that was really awesome. So, anyway, just a small thing.
You know, it would be that, you know, Zatanna was all feisty and sassy and had no obvious interest in him whatsoever and did silly backwards talking spells to, like, put his cigarettes out before he put his matches out before he could light his cigarettes or make his trousers fall down or something, and then they would totally hook up in the final scene.
That would be very fanboy of us. Yes. All right, let's talk about some comics then.
Yeah,
let's talk about some comics that came out this week. So this is it, our top five must read books of the week in no particular order, as we are prone to do in this show. Because we've never done this before, so that's the way we're doing it. Number five, then, on our list is going to be X-Men number one. That is a new number one, and of some interest. This is the all-female X-Men book, is that correct?
Yeah, this is the book that should be X-Ladies, but it got named X-Men number one.
X-Women.
I'm still holding out for X-Ladies, but I don't think they're going to change it. I think
Double X-Men.
Double
X Men. Yeah. That works as well.
Yeah. It's a cool book. I like it. It's different. I don't know. I know you guys talked about a while back. Brian Wood. Is his name Brian Wood?
Yeah. Yeah.
What did he do? I don't know if I've read anything he's done before.
Well, he's doing Star Wars over at Dark Horse at the minute.
He's shopping around for a new job.
Well, yeah. Yeah, well, he's with Marvel now, so maybe they can just carry that on.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a cool creative team. He's writer, Olivier. Is that how you say it? Copel?
Olivier.
Copel. Yeah. Great art. I mean, the book is gorgeous. It's probably the best looking X-Men book that's coming out right now. And I love Dark Wolverine and X-Men.
Yeah, because there's a lot of good artists.
There's a lot of good artists in the X-Men books, but this book.
When you can say that about like Stuart Immonen and Fraser Irving and Chris Bacalo and I forget who's drawing Wolverine at the X-Men at the minute, but yeah, there's a lot of good talent on the X-Books art-wise.
Yeah, and it's just a really great looking book. I mean, it's good. I don't know what to say about it. I mean, I'd recommend it because it's something different, and it's not. The focus is like it's basically the X-Men women. They're not the only characters that are in the book. And it is a little bit misleading because it's like another X-Men book. You know what I mean? It's like because Beast is in there and some of the other X characters are in there. But it does feel like they're going to kind of focus a little bit more on the female characters. And for God's sakes, they bring Jubilee back in this issue.
Yeah, answer me this question because I was wondering this. I didn't get a chance to read this. I wanted to get a look at it. I haven't bothered enough to look this up for myself. Is Jubilee still a vampire?
I don't know. I was going to ask you that. Okay, she's out in the daylight because she's like on a plane. She's like coming from, I think, Germany or something back to the United States. And I'm thinking, okay, well, she's out in the daylight, so maybe she's not a vampire. But then again, maybe she's one of those vampires that goes out in the daylight. I don't know.
A reverse vampire.
Or are they just going to ignore that? Or I mean,
she doesn't like drink anybody's blood in the issue, if that helps. You know,
she looks
like an Asian, you know, young lady. You know, she doesn't look like.
Well, that's rare enough in and of itself, so that's nice.
Yeah.
Rare enough when anybody actually remembers to draw Jubilee Asians.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. The art's
there's
nice
an entire generation of people who don't realize Jubilee's supposed to be American Chinese.
Her name is Jubilation Lee.
Yeah,
but then nobody would acknowledge that. She's Jubilee. People, you know, whenever you hear what Jubilee's real name is, your immediate reaction is not, oh, Chinese. It's, what a stupid name. Moving on.
Who names their kids Jubilation?
Yeah. Jubilation Lee. It's like she got the code name first and worked backwards.
Yeah. Oh, so true.
Yeah, but the book is a good start. I'm looking forward to the next couple of issues. We'll see how this goes. If they can keep the creative team. I don't want the artist or the writer to leave. Because, like, you know, like how that happens. You'll have, like, after
well,
the first
Marvel's doing
arc
pretty
or something.
Good about it right now.
Yeah, they've kept a lot of people on books, so.
Bryce says in the chat that she's pretty sure she still is a vampire.
Okay. We'll go with that then.
That works.
She is still a vampire. We just can't tell.
Can she still do the sparkly things even though she's a vampire, or would that kill her? Would she go...
No, well, she lost her part.
Like, like she forgets one time and like throws him out there and then, melting!
Well, no, she lost her part. So that's why she became a vampire. She got all desperate and shit. But
I didn't read any of that, so I had no idea.
Oh, wow.
I have got her power back after... Christ, I don't even know now.
I don't
know. Maybe she got her powers back after the Phoenix event.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, like, that's the reason you gotta read issue two, because you gotta find out, is Jubilee still a vampire?
We need are things we need to know. So.
Inquiring minds want to know,
so
Brian.
Pick up this book and then you want the next one.
I just want to know, like, when Wolverine's gonna get a star and they're gonna go team up 1990s style.
Oh, man.
Something.
Well, it's Marvel, so it can't be too far off. I mean, hell, I had Wolverine in my Scarlet Spider the other day, so, you know, it's all possible.
Got to look forward to soon.
So,
that's X-Men number one. Very
awesome.
Good.
So, number four, then, on our list is Adventures of Superman, number one again.
Now, we all remember this book, right?
Is this the one that they canceled the family thing for and then did this?
It's like Superman title back in the day, Adventures of Superman.
Well, yeah.
Right?
Okay, so we don't remember that this is the Orson Scott Card was supposed to do the story in. That
That's what this was. Okay.
I mean, also that statement that Superman Family Adventures was canceled to make way for this is probably.
Well, I saw this and I was going to pick it up because I didn't know. Is this a monthly? Is this like a one shot? What is this? Is this a monthly?
It is.
It's part of the anniversary,
right? This is part of DC's line of digital first comics that come out, you know, online first and are then collected in print, like Legends of the Dark Knight. Smallville 11, Little Gotham, Batman Unlimited, what else? Batman Beyond Unlimited. There's a bunch more that I'm forgetting. This would be most comparable to Batman Legends of the Dark Knight, where it is just creators of note or not. In this case, yes, of note.
So in the digital, was it broke up into the short stories? Like it was just the short story?
Okay. Yeah, this issue is made up of 3 10-page stories, which were three separate, I think, 99-cent digital releases, which are here collected into one, 30-story pages altogether, you know. So you get 3 stories. You get one by Jeff Parker with art by Chris Samnee. That's Jeff Parker of Thunderbolts, or I know mainly it's Jeff Parker as Agents of Atlas. I was inclined to pick it up because of that. You get a story by Jeff Lemire of Chew and various other DC projects, which he wrote and drew. And you get one by who's the other one? Justin Jordan and Riley. Hang on. Who's the creator team on that one? Can't find it. Justin Jordan and Riley Rossmo. Yes, that was right. And they are like the Legends of the Dark Knight stories, just little snippets of Superman's life. The first one by Parker is I will sum it up by saying it would feel very at home in the Superman animated series. It's very straightforward, lovely.
Yeah,
art.
I love Chris Samnee's art. I want him on a Superman book. Like
this is the guy we know from Daredevil at the moment. Probably the single most important thing to mention about this entire book is that Superman has got red trunks in all 3 stories.
Hey, red trunks! Yay!
He doesn't have the new suit. What's up with that?
This is not New 52 concerns. So there's immediately something very classic. I think the whole idea that all 3 stories really are something very cozy and very classically wonderfully lovely Superman. You know, the first one is by Parker is just Superman saving people from a superpower guy running rampant. The last one is probably the most forgettable one, in which Bizarro goes, just causes some trouble, and Superman stops him from causing trouble by using Bizarro logic. There's nothing much else to say about it. The middle one by Jeff Lemire is definitely the best, in which
the middle one's cute. I like the middle one.
Yeah, it's so cute. It's one of those very classically, the classic touching side of Superman, in which two boys play Superman, and one of them get, you know, one of them wins. He's going to be Superman. He's always Superman. And then the other one just dances between whatever villain he feels like being, and we go from Luthor to Brainiac to Parasite to General Zod to Bizarro, and they're fighting on the moon, and they're fighting over Kandor, and they're fighting Metropolis and whatever. And it's just very cute, and it has a nice warm-hearted ending as well that could be interpreted in a totally creepy way. I would be honest when I would say that I really have no particular inclination to pick up the second one off the back of this, because they are just single one-shot stories. They're good for what they are. The Lemire one is the most memorable. The others do not linger in the brain. They are fine for what they are. But if I was being the political radical, I am not. I would say I probably bought it more to make a to send a message to DC than anything else.
You want them to go ahead and continue this line and get that Orson Scott Card book out.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Pick it up for the Lemire story, but the others are fine for what they are. The Lemire story is worth reading.
Excellent. Okay, number three on our list, in, again, no particular order, is End Time of Brom and Ben? What?
The End Time of Brom and Ben, which is the basic concept of that one, is the rapture happens, and Brom, a early 20s stoner guy, goes off with the rapture. 30 seconds later, he's sent back because of a clerical error.
What?
Nice.
He then, as he's actually been in heaven for in his time, a few weeks, then starts setting himself up to be a new, almost rock star messiah, which doesn't go too well, so he sets himself up to be the Antichrist. Issue 4 just came out this week, and it appears that Penn and Teller are in fact the Antichrists. And the reason that they are so annoyed at Brom and Ben is because, well, they've messed up their plans by letting everyone know that heaven exists, hell exists, and you can't go to Valhalla unless you really want to.
Huh.
It is a weird little comic. It's... Do you remember in the early 2000s when you thought Kevin Smith was good?
I vaguely remember those times, yes.
It's like returning to that kind of time where you have the really witty banter, lots of over-exaggerated thing, and a giant hulking out demon named Lydia, which always makes me happy. I recommend it. It is... Full, I don't want to say too much about it because I don't want to ruin a lot of the surprises. If nothing else, the giant words on the top of Vegas that says, "Now fuck off," pointing towards heaven, made me chuckle. Seriously made me chuckle.
That's awesome.
These little things that you don't notice the first time round, such as the realization at one point where the two main characters, Ben and Brom, they realize that you don't have to go to heaven. The only thing keeping people in hell is the fact that they think they deserve to go to hell, or they have been told they're going to hell or heaven. And then the realization that hell could just empty, and everybody could just walk out of heaven because they've spent all of their lives being really, really good, and they didn't need to be. Because if they wanted to, they could go to Valhalla, because that's a choice as well. The picture is lots of guys goose-stepping with Hitler walking through the pearly gates. It is full of lots of little wonderful lines. I'm just trying to find the one about the lass who in the last episode got drugged by accident and spends the entire issue rolling around on the floor, pointing at things with a minigun, shouting about not being afraid of any goats.
Wow.
It's just full of odd little moments, and I'm a fan.
Nice.
Who's the writer on it? Did I miss you saying who the writer was?
No, I didn't. Let me just go back to the first page. Do-do-do-do-do.
Kevin Smith.
Oh, don't say that to me. And as luck would have it, my comic reader just crashed.
God damn it.
You're not I'm sorry. You're not supposed to tell Chris McCullough you're reading on digital. It's.
It's okay.
I buy comics twice a lot of the time, so I don't have to cart them around to work.
It's okay. I like Comixology.
Well, through the miracle of digital technology, I have confirmed that the writer of that is James Asmus and Jim Fistante.
Yes, okay, well, there you go.
Thanks.
And James Asmus is the only name I know there, but I know that's because he was working on. He worked on Generation Hope. I remember he was writing at Marvel, and he was writing Gambit as well. Was writing Gambit because that's been canceled.
Did Gambit get canceled?
Gambit got canceled. It's not over yet, but it is.
They didn't have enough issues of him showering, right?
No, so, there's not. Clearly enough, not. There were not enough abs.
That was the problem.
Not enough abs. For sure.
If I haven't sold this book to you, the fact that in the first issue there is the next door neighbor who, now that he's realized the rapture has happened, the apocalypse has taken place, no longer feels the need to knock on doors or ring doorbells or, in fact, open doors, but instead run through them with an axe.
Oh my God!
In that first issue, he complains about the fact that so far the apocalypse has happened and not a single zombie has rose. That isn't mentioned again until the fourth issue, where. Bram, who has been decapitated at this point, has his body rise from the dead, and the look of sheer joy on this one guy's face as he runs at the body going, "At last!"
Oh, wow. Okay, so, yeah, you want to check this book out. I might want to check this book out.
I thought that one sounded fun when it was solicited, all
right. Oh, nice.
And that's the last issue, right? That was only a four-issue mini,
yeah,
wasn't it?
It was just a four-issue mini.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get that. Is that. Well, I guess hopefully that'll be collected then, correct?
Or no? You should.
It will be in the not too distant future.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to grab that when that gets collected. That sounds a lot of fun. Maybe we'll talk about that more on a future top trades or something segment that we will also have. Okay, number two then on our list of no particular order of best books, things you should buy and stuff is Earth 2. So I guess this is gonna be the end of Robinson, maybe, or close to it. Then I guess.
Well, he's probably got a couple.
Yeah, he may have a couple.
He's going to finish up his arc that he's working right now, right? Is that or is it just him?
It's hard to know with DC. Yeah. Honestly. I think he said what issue was the last issue of DC of Earth 2 that was out?
12. So 13 is
12. Is it that far in already? Oh,
yeah.
God. Oh, in that case, I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought he said his last one was 10. So obviously, I'm talking out my arse.
I was thinking I read somewhere that he's going to get to sort of finish up. Something he's working on, but everything he has planned for like the next year is like out the door. Sorry.
Thrown out the window. Gone.
Yeah.
This is a great, really interesting story, actually. It's an Adam-focused story.
yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
And so get some focus on Adam, a little bit of background, which still seems kind of vague and interesting. And then there's
Has he been in Earth 2 before?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he played a part in it before. He even was in, like the second or third issue, I want to say.
Okay, cool.
And has been in and out since that time. This issue talks about a lot of stuff that's going on in the background. Let's see what Captain Steel is in this as well. Like I said, there's a lot of little, you know, feeder elements that are in this book. Oh, yeah, there's a Batman, and then, but there's also, you know, oh, Batman. Yeah, Batman. That's,
Yeah, just a little bit of news.
That's kind of the selling point of the issue. I mean, for God's sakes, who wants to buy an annual? Oh, wait, there's a new Batman.
Well, and I feel a little bit of bait and switch with it, you know, because this is the introduction of the Earth 2, the new Batman of Earth 2. They sold it as the introduction of that, and it is. I mean, it doesn't fall short of that at all, even though this is mostly an Adam-focused story. I guess they felt like they couldn't sell it by focusing on the Atom. They focus on the Earth 2 Batman that we learn absolutely nothing about and is literally in maybe five pages.
Turns out if you put the Atom on your cover, you actually sell less issues than you put Batman.
Right. You put Batman on the cover, you sell books. You put Atom on the cover, and you don't. So there you go. Yeah. So this is actually setting up. And actually, there was like two or three pages of here of Barda and Mr. Miracle, so yay for that. We are definitely getting into like the bigger world here of Earth 2. You know, that they've been setting up for a little while. They've been talking about Steppenwolf setting up his empire and kind of, you know, leaning in that direction. We've really got some super players in play. We know the military is setting up their own sort of super group. You know, Hawkgirl's alignment has been out there. So they are really kind of setting up for this next push. Now, that's where I'm concerned, because Robinson has set all this up. So who knows where the next writer is going to take it. But
I want to love that book, but man, it's like I got behind it, and then I got caught up, and I liked it, and then now he's leaving the book, and I'm like,
yeah, I know.
It's I want to drop the book, and I don't even want to. I don't even care, really.
I'll see.
Anybody on it, and I kind of don't care at this point.
It'll just depend on how it goes. I'm gonna check it out. I'm not gonna cut it too quick, but I'll give it a shot.
Just publish an Earth 2, a Fourth World book, guys. I don't know. I look up from my Avengers whenever you publish that.
Oh, so true. So, the number one book on our list, which is, again, of no particular order, is another number one, which is Doomsday. Did I type that correctly? It's Doomsday, number one.
And Doomsday is a... You're going to notice a trend here. It's another really odd, off-kilter book.
Now, hang on. This is Doomsday 0.1, right?
Yes, it is. It is.
Well, that's not Doomsday an issue number. That's the title.
So this isn't Doomsday the guy that beats up Superman.
Point one. Okay, that's a little.
It's not the guy that beats up Superman, right?
No. Not
that
no.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure.
It is by IDW, written by John Byrne, pencil and inks by John Byrne.
Yeah.
Sorry, I couldn't pronounce that for a second there. And the entire point of it is, Earth has an apocalypse. And it's all from the point of view of a group of multiracial guys on the space station watching it happen.
Nice! That kind of sucks. You know what?
Yeah.
I think if I would have to like break the tension, because if that happened, I would just go, oh, well, damn.
Somebody would just go...
Fart.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, that, shit.
That sounds like one of two new movie trailers lately.
Oh.
Like end of the world stuff, and then like breaking up the tension with like a fart joke or something.
Yeah.
That sounds like two trailers I've seen recently.
Yeah. What? This is the end.
This is the end.
I cannot
wait
to see that movie.
Yeah. Sounds like every Michael Bay movie to me.
Yeah.
Is it entirely set on the space station?
No. Halfway through the issue, they try to make a landing back on Earth. And then at the end of the issue, they get to see the ash-ridden planet that they used to call home. It ends just with them seeing the first sunrise after Doomsday.
Wow.
Because I just had to go check, because I thought this was the case. But this is... I'm not sure if you'd call it a reimagining or a reboot or a reinterpretation or an ultimate version of whatever, but this is based on whatever, Doomsday Plus One, which was John Byrne's first professional comics work in the 1970s. Published by Charles.
Right.
Yeah, so that's why it's Doomsday Point One. That's why it's part of the... Now, he was only the artist on it. Joe Gill wrote it. But,
interesting.
Yeah, that's what that is. Yeah.
So
that I'm familiar with.
No, it's not what I've ever heard of. I might have to go back and have a look at that, see how it matches up to this one.
Isn't
I think my favorite part of this...
comics from the 70s, you know.
I think my favorite bit of this is the bit where they're in the shuttle and they do 40 orbits around Earth and just watch it burn.
Wow.
And it's just... Ooh. And was it 19th orbit. Europe is gone. India. Russia. Most of the Asian continent. I find myself thinking not only the people who have perished, but the cultures, the histories. 31st orbit. The oceans and ice caps have no effect of slowing the ring of fire. Today we watch Canada burn away.
Oh. Wow.
So it's, you know, it's really happy-go-lucky, cheerful stuff, yes. Yeah. But it has a bit of proper science fiction that you used to be able to get in the sort of 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Really enjoying it. I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes.
I'm just thinking, and we watched Jersey Burn, and we just sort of shrugged.
it really makes me think of something like a 2001 when you're talking about like proper type of science fiction.
Reminds me of stuff like the old Andromeda Strain movie.
Yeah,
it's that kind of feel to it.
Okay,
where it's not all action based. It's all quite. I was going to say a slow burn. Yes, it is. It takes 40 minutes for the Earth to burn up. Ooh.
Ooh,
wish I could say that was on purpose. Anyhow, but yeah, it's quite solid and highly recommended.
Nice.
Cool.
So there you go.
I'm glad to hear John Byrne's doing something that's recommended. That's excellent.
And working, yeah.
Yeah.
Good. If it had been last week, I would have been shouting at you to read Helheim. Undead zombie Vikings!
Well, how can you top that? So, all right, there you go. Top five. Need to read. Books of the week. Thank you so much, guys. So, let's move on then, if we will move on, to this week's segment, which is what did we miss? So we've been gone for 2 weeks. Obviously, we've missed out on a bunch of stuff. And we want to kind of catch up and catch ourselves and each other and you all up on what you might have missed that's come out. So what first on that list, I guess, would be a book that we talked about coming out, which is Green Team. Now, Chris McFeely, did you check this out, correct?
Yeah, The Green Team. The Green Team came out. DC's companion book for, well, not really a companion book, but, you know, it's the Where the Movement, which we talked about earlier in the month, was the 99% book. This is the 1% book. The Green Team, which is we may have said it before when we talked about it before, but it's a based on a Joe Simon idea, which one single issue was published of in the 70s before it got sucked up in the DC implosion and ceased to be. And it is about teenage trillionaires using their fabulous wealth to do awesome stuff. So
it's Richie, you know, Rich is what you're saying.
It's kind of Richie Rich, but with superpowers, yeah.
There you go.
But it's not like playing baseball with gold bats or stuff like that.
Yeah.
God.
It is an attempt at altruism. I mean, our POV character is a... let's see, where was it he was from now? His name was Mohammed, but he is from... what did they even say where he was from? Yeah, he is from foreign. Yeah. And he has come to a secret technological expo that only the best of the best companies are invited to. Commodore Murphy is the lead character, and most of them are named for the original characters in Joe Simon's Green Team. Commodore Murphy and for the love of God, you think you could find this stuff when you were looking for it? JP Houston. I bet you can guess what he does. It's kind of there in the name. And Cecil Sunbeam is reimagined as Cecilia Sunbeam, a sort of Lindsay Lohan-esque debutante type. And yeah, he just attends this this tech conference. And then a group of terrorists known as... This is great. They're dressed in this kind of like raggedy, straight-jackety sort of out with like strappy gloves and boots and a ragged face mask with a big smiley face on them. And there are loads of them. And the group's name is the Riot Squad. And I think that's a great name for a bunch of like punk terrorist types. Mm. And then Commodore uses the superpowers that he has, that these technological expos have allowed him to purchase, essentially, to fight back. Basically, I would sum it up and say I didn't enjoy it as much as The Movement, but I thought it was pretty zippy. I wasn't sure what to expect out of Baltazar, because remember, this is written by Art Baltazar and Franco, the Tiny Titan Superman Family Adventures team.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yes, with art by Ig Guara, who I don't know of.
So are you going to keep getting it, you think? Do you think you'll
Coming back for the next one. There's okay. enough going on here that I'm interested in. They lay the characters out in very broad strokes. There's going to need to be some severe deepening going on. I mean, Commodore Murphy is the beautiful, blonde, sunglasses, indoors type of young, hotshot businessman type. Cecilia Sunbeam has nothing between her ears. And J.P. Houston, well, he, god darn it, and what the hell? And, gosh, wow. You know. I found the first issue entertaining enough that I'll come back for the second. Not as good as The Movement, but it's not a bad start. I think I'll come back to check it out some more. Yeah,
yeah, I finally read The Movement. I'm glad I picked that up. That was a good issue.
Yeah, Movement's fun.
Looking forward to the next. I believe the next part's out next week, actually.
Ooh,
cool. Try to get that.
Another thing that came out. This was probably the big thing. This was the thing last week, at least, that everybody was, you know, the big thing we're supposed to be excited about. The Green Lantern, issue 20. This is Geoff Johns' last issue. I almost thought about picking it up, and then I thought, wow, I would have no idea what was going on. So
you could have read it, I think, because what I'd done is I missed half of the issues that it crossed over with and thought, oh, God, I have no idea what's going on. Went, just read the Green Lantern issues, and even though I missed some stuff, I don't think you're supposed to know what's going on.
Did all of the other color cores implode and we're just left with Green Lanterns?
No.
Oh, well, then never mind. Then I don't care.
No, Johns did not shut down his...
He didn't close the door behind him or anything?
No. He did not. Yeah. He did the big thing he does is that at the very end of the story, he does a whatever happened to, and we jump into the future. I mean, the whole thing is presented as some future generation of Green Lanterns being told the story of the final battle of the War of Light.
Yeah. Like, it even starts that way. Like, the first beginning of the issue is, like, it's in the future, and there's, like, a guy that's, like, the keeper of the tomb of the Green Lanterns, and, like, this young, new Green Lantern says, I want to hear the story. I want to hear the story of Hal Jordan. You know, and so it's like, oh, God, you know, it's, like, just epic. You know, it's a big epicness of it.
The story of Hal. Tell us of the Jordan. Tell us of the Jordan. Jordan.
Yeah. Jordan.
String us tales of the Jordan.
And like, I didn't expect us to all like to have picked it up or anything, because I know, like, I think the reason I want to just not let it pass without saying something about it is because I think all of us at some point, I don't know about Adam or not, but all of us at some point enjoyed Geoff Johns' Green Lantern. Yeah. Maybe he didn't enjoy his entire run. Maybe he lost it at some point. Opinions, whatever. But, you know, all of us, I think, enjoyed it at some point, whether it be the Sinestro Corps, which is, I think, the peak, because that was awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, or whatever. But it's just, you know, it's the passing of a generation.
The end of an era.
The end of an era.
Yeah, I think most people would probably basically agree that Blackest Night was...
It was kind of
all downhill after Blackest Night. It stopped being stories about the characters and started just being stories about the cosmology and the world of Green Lantern.
Right.
The big crossover event was more important than the actual character.
I mean, you know, I had to break it down for somebody a while back. And do you know how many books there are, graphic novels, collecting Green Lantern from between Blackest Night until the New 52?
No idea.
Two.
Wow, really?
Yeah, the whole Brightest Day thing with the entities and the War of the Green Lanterns. Like, because everything that was going on in Green Lantern after Blackest Night was just event, chunk, event, chunk, event, chunk.
Wow. Yeah.
But, the sheer, there are some people who hated Geoff Johns' Green Lantern from the outset, but I don't think anybody, even like the most ardent of denier, could ever hope to deny, reasonably, believably deny, the massive significance that Geoff Johns.
Yeah,
I mean, he did the impossible, really. I mean, he made Hal Jordan an important character again, for God's sakes. Hal Jordan had gotten to the point back in the 90s where it's like he was, nobody's reading this book. Nobody gives a shit about Green Lantern. We got to kill him off. We got to introduce Kyle Rayner. We got to do something different with it.
Yeah,
you know, and Geoff Johns.
This Kyle Rayner guy sucks. We got to get him out of here. Let's get.
Hey. Shut up.
It's okay. We made Kyle Rayner a White Lantern now, so everything's okay.
But, like, you know, even though, like, there's all this, like you were talking about, it's just an event. This is, like, just a big ending to the event. It's kind of cool, though. I mean, did you read it, McFeely?
I did read it.
I mean, I kind of like it that how it's, like, he plays it up. Okay, it's the end of the Wrath of the First Lantern, which I still don't know what in the hell the First Lantern is. Like,
they didn't give.
I don't think they ever fully really explaining
where he was, where he came. I mean, he was some dude who turned up just after Krona finished looking at the secrets of the universe and helped.
He was just a human. Yeah, was in a spacesuit. He just showed up and he got the First Lantern ring.
Yeah, he helped the Guardians like through their creation of their mastery of the emotional spectrum and all that, and not once is it ever actually explained like who he is or where he came from or why he's named after that bloke from Earth 3.
And you think like the whole thing is going to be, oh, this issue is just going to be them fighting him, and it's not. Like, that's like done, like, I want to say like what, halfway through the issue, and then like the real fight, the real sort of final thing. I mean, it's not really a fight, but the real sort of like big thing is it really comes down to what do you think it's going to come down to? Hal Jordan and Sinestro. How else are you going to end his run?
Well, yeah, I mean that's what it's been all about.
Hal Jordan and Sinestro. And I thought that was kind of weird.
It's easy to forget that Sinestro was gone for as long as Hal, for longer than Hal was.
Yeah.
I mean, Hal killed Sinestro, and that was it. So, I mean, when Sinestro came back in Rebirth, just as Hal did, it's easy to forget that.
Mm-hmm. And I like that they did that. I mean, it's wacky, it's crazy. You know, oh, he's Parallax Sinestro.
Yeah,
yeah. It's wacky. I mean, it really is wacky, but it's good. And man, it's the things that he does in it. I mean, do you want to like spoil some of it? Are we okay with that, or what do you think?
Well, I mean, nah.
Because it's pretty wildly changing things. Because like what he does, what Sinestro actually does in the issue is gonna. I mean, I guess it's set up for the next writer. The next writer could like undo it if he wants, but like,
But he'd have to stay on the book for more than three issues first. No, this book actually isn't one of the books that's.
It's the other books that are suffering greatly.
But yeah, I mean, it's worth reading. Like, J.D., I think, like, because, I mean, you really love Green Lantern.
Yeah, I do. I just have not. I just got tired of the Johns.
Maybe it's an expensive book, because it was like an $8 issue. Oh my God, it was freaking expensive. But it's big. There's like a lot of content in here.
Good, yeah.
Wait until, like, Comixology drops the price, because they'll do it in a couple of weeks, and get it for, like, $4 or $5 or something.
Yeah, I might check it out.
It's worth reading, because I think... Because you'll even if you have no idea what's going on, I think it does a good enough job to keep you going. Because it recaps. I mean, Johns is good at one thing. He's good at recapping events within his story.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could like read this and you'd be like, "Oh God, you know this happened and this happened. Oh, I understand why Sinestro is so pissed because this happened and you know all this other stuff." I mean, you've read enough Green Lantern.
Yeah,
I think
I could probably get the gist of it.
Yeah, and you get the gist of a lot of stuff in it. So. But yeah. I thought it was a good ending. I thought it was...
It's a good ending to a rather nice story.
Yeah. But, I mean, as far as, like, an ending to his era, I think it's...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a great, great ending. I think he did a good job with... And then the follow-ups where it's like, you know, oh, that's the end. Well, what happened to everybody? I thought that was cute. I like that. Yeah. I like...
That's a cool way for a writer to, like, really actually be able to put a sense of, like, finality and a real capstone onto something he's been doing while still managing to leave the immediate future open for the...
Yeah.
I know something else did it, but I can't remember what off the top of my head. It rang a bell. I'm sure tons of things have done it, but it rang a bell with me that I can't remember what it was, but it reminded me of something where we got this little look into the future and found that, he married that one, and he went off and did this, and he died. Yeah. Did the other thing, you know.
I love the Guy Gardner one. That was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, and if any writer ever earned the right to do that.
So, oh, yeah. Totally. Yeah, yeah. He
fixed Green Lantern. You know, I mean, he made Green Lantern something people were willing to care about again. He propelled Green Lantern right up into the A-list of DC heroes.
They even got a shitty movie. So.
Yeah, as much as we rip on that film, like, of that film even happening before Geoff Johns existed was nil. It was nothing. It was numb.
Really, he set the tent pole, too. I mean, because, like, really, everything after is going to be compared to this.
Yeah,
totally.
And it's going to be so difficult for anybody after this to write Green Lantern now. It's,
All right, so one final thing then I guess you guys wanted to mention was Ultimate Spider-Man. Was that was on the list as well, correct?
Mostly just for the shock first page.
So, what had happened, I mean, last?
Well, issue 22 was the last part of a multi-part story called Venom War, in which a rather confusing symbiote appeared that we didn't really get an explanation for who it was or why it was coming after him. But it was sure there, and his mom sure died in a police crossfire. His father was badly injured because the symbiote came for the father, thinking that the father was Spider-Man, following up from a recent subplot with Betty Brant thinking that she'd figured out that Spider-Man was Miles' father. And so they took the father to the hospital after the detective thing followed them there, and in a police shootout, Miles' mum died. And the end of the comic was Miles vowing that he would be Spider-Man no more. The cover
of
issue.
He's never going to do it again. He's done.
And the cover of 23 is, of course, the costume in the trash can in the alleyway. Classic Spider-Man 50 cover parody homage. Spider-Man no more. And it's just... I don't think anybody could believably have expected the first page of issue 23 to just be in giant block letters. 1 year later. What?
Yeah, I had no idea they were going to do that. Because like, I was expecting, you open the issue and it'd be like the next day or something. And it's like, oh God, you know, somebody's like out there and getting attacked and hurt. Why aren't you going out there and helping them? And then there'd be like several issues about him trying to decide if he wants to go back and be here again.
Nope.
And
jump
then we
ahead.
Find out, he just like washed his hands of it 1 year later and he's doing his own shit.
He honest to God, gave it up.
Wow.
He gave it up completely. Yeah. He did, yeah.
I mean, this is a talking head issue. Purely, entirely, people sitting around in restaurants and schoolrooms and houses being sad and talking. But Bendis writes some of the best talking head issues in the business.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, it's what he does. So.
We find out Miles is dating Ultimate Kate Bishop, which is new. And it feels a little less creepy because he's like a year older now.
Oh, well, that helps.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, he's practically 15.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I'm like, it's instead of being 13, where you were like, man, you're really young to be a superhero, and I don't even want you to have romance drama in your life. It feels weird, you know.
And it's strange feels a little... one.
And he didn't focus on that at all, either, which
she was just there, and I was like,
decision. What? Yeah.
Kate Bishop?
Yeah. The art makes him look a little older than the 1 year later than he
and it's a different artist, is. Too, right? I mean, this is the first... issue for a new artist, if I remember correctly.
Who is the artist on this one? No, it's David
McKez.
He's been in and out, standing in for Sarah Pichelli whenever she's been busy doing other things. He's not.
Yeah, but I mean, like, we lost her, and like.
Oh yeah, she's guy, gone. Right?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's officially
he's
gone.
He's the ongoing dude now.
So it's a good spot to put in like the new ongoing guy too. Like one year later, you know, it's really really separate from the other stuff.
Yeah,
you
have to change stuff up. So
yeah,
and of course, I mean. Spider Woman's trying to get Miles back in the costume already. I mean, it's not going to last long.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be hard to tell an Ultimate Spider-Man book with a dude walking around being not Spider-Man.
Yeah. What if there's another Spider-Man that shows up?
Well, that would kind of ruin the whole...
Then it's like this dude walking around talking about, who is the other Spider-Man?
Yeah. That would also be not exciting.
Ultimate Matty Franklin.
Oh, goodness. So
some people will get that.
There was some other good stuff that came out, too. We won't go into all of it. I know that Superior came out as well. That was first issue with Doc without Peter.
Yeah.
And that was great. And last issue of Firestorm came out as well. So a bunch of other things we won't touch on, but there was a lot of good stuff out there as well.
I will also actually throw a nod towards Avengers: The Enemy Within, #1, which came out just last
week. That did come out. It was good.
This is the one shot to kick off a crossover between Avengers Assemble and Captain Marvel, which is good. Like, it's well good. And I'm like, why is Captain Marvel not this good when I was reading it? But at the same time, I was kind of resentful of it because it is abundantly obvious that this is a Captain Marvel story that's just sort of grown outside of its boundaries, that really doesn't, that I am hard pressed to imagine will have any reason to be in Avengers Assemble. Because Captain Marvel is not long for this world. Like, it sells for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And
surprised it's still kicking. I'm surprised.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like you don't want to be the one to say it, but it's getting that extra little push because it's a female-led book.
Yeah.
It is. Like, that's why this book is still being published. And I mean, Avengers Assemble is not exactly leaps and bounds ahead of it either.
Yeah.
But it's not going to give Captain Marvel sales or anything. That's not going to happen. And I mean, I'm pissed off at Avengers Assemble anyway because I discovered that there were no issue 14 and 15.
Didn't they get overridden
They had Ultron tie-in issues, but they published them as 13 and 14 AU. And there were no regular 13 and 14.
Oh,
I think I saw that was happening.
They didn't, yeah.
Well, hey, it took over my...
They weren't written by DeConnick, so I didn't pick them up.
It took over my Uncanny, too. My Uncanny Avengers. Uncanny Avengers is set in the Ultron...
Issue of Uncanny Avengers also?
They didn't skip an Uncanny Avengers.
It's like built into the story. Yeah.
So what does that say that like the one book that they skipped the issues on is Avengers Assemble? What does that say?
And I mean, Avengers Assemble, for being the book that was originally promoted as the one you could just pick up and go with, we've got two issues of crossover with this next, And then we have like Infinity crossovers after this as well, preceded by two issues of Age of Ultron crossovers.
Yeah.
They're
farking it up a little bit.
But removed of all of that, the first part of Enemy Within was legitimately very good.
I had fun with it. I liked it.
Yeah.
So. I missed out on it. My comic shop didn't even get it, I don't think. I don't even think they even ordered it.
But I have this, not even that it's a Captain Marvel story that's grown beyond its boundaries. I have this gnawing sensation that it could just be issues like 15, 16, 17, 18 of Captain Marvel that have just been put in Avengers Assemble, you know? This is Captain Marvel 15.
Yeah.
This is not a one shot.
Yeah, you know? It totally was that.
It's got a Captain Marvel letters page in the back. You know, this is the next issue of Captain Marvel.
Huh.
Yeah. But it was good. It was still good.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the important takeaway. It was good.
It just should have been the next issue.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, the time has come then, gentlemen. The time has come to pick our first best book of the week, unlike we have done ever before. So, for those
some,
of you...
Some, ominous or, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire kind of waiting
kind
music?
Of. Yeah, totally. There's a little bit of tension here. That's where...
final answer?
Yeah, so... here is how this works. You each will have 30 seconds, because I'm going to go ahead and limit you. Mainly just because it's Chris Mafili, and if I don't, he will just go on. Love you too, bro. And so each will have 30 seconds. You're going to sell me on what you think is the best book of the week. It could be something that you have already mentioned or that someone else has mentioned. It could be something you haven't, whatever. And then when it's all said and done, I will have the final say over what is the best book of the week. So since Adam is our guest, he gets to go first and be in the hot seat first. So, Adam, you have 30 seconds, and your time starts now.
I could pick Helheim. I could pick More Than Meets the Eye 17. But I'm going to go back to what I've already mentioned with the End Times of Bram and Bill. And I'm going to do it by saying the following lines. Sorry, I didn't mean to get emotional. Of course, I'm not sure if that's a tear or the rest of my eyeball running down my cheek. It's your eyeball. This is the greatest day of my life. Could you fix his face? I could burn the other half to match. I'm good, thanks.
Well done. Well done.
Recommendation, I
think. That's well done, and right, almost exactly at 30 seconds as well. So very good. Very good on that. Chris Mafili, you are going to be up next, sir, and your time will start now.
Okay, well, I am actually going to recommend More Than Meets the Eye number 17, because I had very few comics this week, and there's no question that this one was the best of it. First part of the finale to the first season of the comic. It's not that I haven't enjoyed More Than Meets the Eye or anything. I still think it's great. Some of the best Transformers comics we've ever had. But the last batch of issues have been pure drama and nothing else. There has really been no plot progression. Everything has been at the expense of getting sad robots to sit around and talk about their feelings. And this one is all plot, all action, all the plot threads colliding together that have come from the first year and a half of the comic.
And so time. So, very good.
I only have 1 cent left, so not too bad.
Yeah, not too bad. See? 30 seconds isn't awful. All right, Chris Triplett, you're going to round us out, sir.
I don't even need the 30 seconds.
You don't even need the 30 seconds?
No, because what I'm going to say is Transformers More Than Meets the Eye number 17, and ditto to everything he just said. Because
can I get another 30 then?
Yeah, no. I mean, because it's like, Hey, everybody was like dying in the last couple of issues. Well, hey, maybe some more people are dying. Oh my God, it's still going. Oh God, they're introducing new things that's going on here. What the hell? Hey, what else happened this week? Nothing. In the world of Transformers comics, when More Than Meets the Eye comes out, really nothing else happened that week. It's like that book, and it's maybe Daredevil, but Daredevil didn't come out this week, so it's More Than Meets the Eye.
You know, you almost did use 30 seconds there, actually. I had to start your time, so.
Okay.
You did good. Well, Adam was actually the closest to being on 30 seconds, though. That's amazing. Good job, Adam. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Yay!
So, so in my grandness as the host of the show, I will be picking then the final book, which I say is the best book of the week, and I am going to go ahead and go with the majority and say it is More Than Meets the Eye. I have
Fix.
begin this book, but I didn't actually get to read it yet, so I'm actually very excited to read it. But, hey, I had... Sorry, did I mention when I had tornadoes trying to kill me, okay? Like, I had to, like...
You had more
that should have justified your reason to read the book. Red is coming. I might die. I need to
get more than
BCI,
Red.
Before I die.
That's the recommendation right there. More than meets the eye, the book to read before you die. put all of the things ahead of it. So no, I'm really excited about getting into this. But I think hands down, I mean, it has been a top book week after week. There's nothing else that could have even topped it. Maybe New Avengers, which we also didn't talk about, but I liked.
Which was good.
It was a good issue. It just wasn't a breakout issue, and I almost went with that. But chose not to in order to be nice this time and go with the majority. But
you not pick this issue after the ending of last issue and the beginning of this one with Tailgate? Oh, my God. How could you not pick this?
I mean, tolerance for More Than Meets the Eye is drama. I was reflecting on it, and it's like – and I'm not damning the book or anything, but it's like sort of nothing has happened since issue 9. Like everything has just been up to facilitate character drama and people dying. And, you know, we've had the Overlord plot hanging over our heads since number 6. And what did that culminate in? Sad robots sitting around talking about their feelings.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, yeah, Overlord broke out, but there was no mad conspiracy behind it that there's more to be explored about. Yeah, we know Prowl did something dickish, but it's like, it's just... hey, he's dead. Everybody cry about it. And let's have a whole issue about everybody crying about it. I'm not saying that. The progressiveness that James Roberts has brought to Transformers comics can never be overstated. In the annals of history, cannot be overstated. But I was really ready for something. pardon me, for something beyond Fiedel's bait to actually happen, and that's what this really delivered on. But you know what? Awesome. Just before we go, what I will throw a shout out to, because I think it's really unfair, is Transformers Beast Hunters, which also came out, the first issue of which came out this week.
I really
wish that could have come out on another week, because it's exactly like Triplett says. In Transformers comics, when More Than Meets the Eye comes out, that's it.
Nothing else matters.
It's a sort of gray noise. But Beast Hunters number 1 is actually really good, too.
It's not bad. Yeah, I liked it.
No, it's far meatier than Rage of the Dinobots was. It's a Dinobot story in which Grimlock is sidelined and Sludge and Snarl, the two also-rans of the Dinobots, actually take center stage. We get new characters based on G1 characters, new female characters. It's witty, snappy dialogue, you know. Firestar, is that you? No, it's Optimus Prime. I had some work done.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a fun book. I'm looking forward to it because it's something different. It's not... you know, hey, this is our political book. Hey, this is our, you know, out in space book. And hey, this is, you know, our spotlights or something. Yeah, this is our, you know, crazy Transformers Prime sort of crossover Dinobot book, you know?
And it's the fact that they actually put Sludge and Snarl. Who knew the Dinobots had personalities, really? I mean, Grimlock is Grimlock. Everybody knows Swoop as well because he's the other Dinobot who gets stuff to do in the cartoons and comics. Slag is famous for being the big, angry one. And Sludge and Snarl are the other guys. That's all they have ever been in the Dinobots. And here we have a Sludge who is, like, compassionate and trying to talk Grimlock back off the edge. And Snarl is this analytical guy who is really saying that, you know, maybe if we... taxing Grimlock is better for the planet because there are these debates and disputes and things that need to be settled that only he can do, even if it's going to risk damaging him personally. And so it's like, who knew the Dinobots could have personalities? Really, I really wish it had come out in a different week and had some room to breathe, because it is honestly really worthy and worth checking out.
Really makes me want to get a Sludge toy, because, like, Sludge was one of the only Dinobots I owned from the G1 toys.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah.
We haven't had a Sludge toy since.
Yeah, there we go. We need a Generation Sludge.
No, yeah.
Needle 5, damn it.
Maybe a Beast Hunter's Sludge. I'd be fine with that.
Yep.
I mean, animals.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, heck, Beast Hunters is all. I mean, this is set on Cybertron with the Dinobots following on from Rage of Ram. I mean, the Beast Hunters title is a bit disingenuous because there's nothing to do with Beast Hunters happening in it at all. Probably as the book goes on and once the cartoon has finished, they'll be able to
do more. Yeah,
but right now it's got nothing to do with it at all. But it is about blending the worlds of Transformers Prime and the Fall of Cybertron, War of Cybertron video games even more.
Gotcha. The aligned continuity again.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the Rage of the Dinobots mini.
Huge Rage of the Dinobots. very, very underrated. It was a very solid comic, not massively remarkable, but solid comic that a lot of people were slamming for reasons I just could not fathom.
Yeah, it wasn't the greatest thing I ever read, but you know, it was all right. It was not bad.
Yeah, it was fine. You know, it was a perfectly competent comic. There was nothing wrong with it.
It gave us Sirket, who I loved.
Yeah, Sirket. And Shocks.
So are we getting a repaint of that toy? Is it going to be Sirket? Is that a lock?
No. Sirket
the Reddick.
Isn't Sirket already coming out? Isn't that the...
No, that's Ripclaw. Ripclaw is the mold, and Sirket...
Ripclaw is out, but what I'm saying, are we going to get a repaint of it so it looks like...
I don't think... Well, it would be nice, but I don't know. Who knows?
Ah,
is that a future BotCon exclusive, you think?
Who knows?
I would say the potential's pretty high, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a future Atom exclusive. I've already bought the paints and paintbrushes.
But to get back on the More Than Meets the Eye, I just want to say one quick thing. The art is really nice, especially on this one page where they're all looking at the portal. I want a poster of that. You got like everybody just kind of looking up and like their hopes and dreams. I don't know if it's like fear or maybe there's hopes and dreams like looking at the portal. Yeah, that's cool.
I would never have thought that I would consistently and thoroughly sing the praises of Alex Milne as much as I do with More Than Meets the Eye, but that guy just completely, pardon the pun, transformed his body of work with this series.
It's been great.
I can't say enough good things about the art on it as well, and I never thought that I would be able to say that.
Yay! All right. Well, there you go. Best book of the week, More Than Meets the Eye. You definitely have to check that book out. You should also check out most of the stuff that we talk about on the show, because if it's good, we'll usually talk about it. If it's not, we usually don't. So, again, that is our show. Again, we want to give a shout-out to Nicole and say that we are thinking about her. I know that she's going to be listening to the show. And we do wish her a speedy recovery. And thank you, Adam, for being here and joining us on our first...
Thank you for bringing me on again. And blaming me for this going horribly wrong.
Yes. So I think it came off pretty well. I'm happy. So,
yeah, I think
so.
It doesn't seem as much of a train wreck as I thought it would.
I know. It seemed worse when I was describing it, wasn't it?
Yeah, it did.
It seemed far worse when I described it. The result was, I think, much better. So anyway, thank you all for tuning in. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
You've been watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely. Download our Android apps. Visit tfradio.net/Android or search Google Play for Radio Free Cybertron. Watch Fanboy Versus on your TV. Visit tfradio.net/TV to learn more. Have a question or comment? Leave it on our Facebook fan page or mail it to contact@tfradio.net.